genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turning now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Now, every show has a theme. Today's theme is high visibility, low visibility. In our first half hour, we talked to Shirley Jones, one of the most highly visible actresses of the 1970s. In this half hour, we're going to talk to an expert that reveals some of our most secret, low visibility places on Earth. Earlier this morning, you may not have noticed it, but I did, an Atlas V rocket launched a spy satellite into space from Vandenberg Air Force Base. The spy satellite is going to become part of our black ops network that we have to keep our country secure. Maybe, just maybe, nobody outside of the military or the deepest halls of the federal government knows more about black ops than our next guest. He's a geographer by training. He uses detective-like methods, to track down the money, the physical assets, and the people of the black ops world. He's here today to shed some light on the blank spots on the map where America's secret bases exist. Trevor Paglen is an artist, a writer, an experimental geographer whose work deliberately blurs the lines between social science, contemporary art, journalism, and other disciplines to construct an unfamiliar, yet meticulously researched way to see and interpret the world around us. Paglen has all kinds of books. He's written three books, including his most recent one, which is titled Blank Spots in the Map. And he holds a BA from UC Berkeley, an MFA from the School of Art Institute of Chicago, and a PhD in geography from UC Berkeley. Welcome to the show, Trevor. How are you today?
Fantastic. Thank you so much for having me on the show. Yeah, you guys had a nice light show last night there with NROL 41 going up into the skies, huh?
NROL 41, that was the name of the satellite?
The name of the launch was NROL-41 for National Reconnaissance Office Launch Number 41. And National Reconnaissance Office is like the secret version of NASA. They're a black space agency that was started basically about a year after NASA was born in 1961, I think. And the existence of this secret of this space agency was a secret until 1992. Everything that they do now is still classified, but only a few years ago you would go to prison if you said the words National Reconnaissance Office, so that's kind of funny.
Wow. Well, I have to ask you, Trevor, one of the first things that struck me when I got your book was, how does a geographer all of a sudden become interested in this, and also your detective-like method of finding these things out? So tell us, what led you down this path?
Yeah, well, to be honest with you, what I was doing in the 1990s, I was studying prisons, actually, in California. And I was trying to learn about, a lot of prisons had been built really starting in about 1980. There was a huge number of prisons that were built. And classically, the older prisons, when we think of the classic prisons like San Quentin or Alcatraz, they were always really like in the middle of the city or the middle of the bay. You could see Alcatraz from everywhere in the Bay Area. But the newer prisons were way out in the desert or the fields or far away, where they were really, really hard to get to. And I was trying to understand why that happened, what kind of happened culturally. And so I started studying some of the places where the prisons were and was using an archive of aerial photographs before there was Google Earth or a lot of the stuff that we know about now. If you wanted aerial photographs, you had to go to the United States Geological Society, and you got their United States Geological Survey, and you got all their archive photos, and you could see in their archives a place, and you could see how it changed over time. So mm-hmm. I was interested in this. And I was going through those archives, and I started noticing, hey, there's stuff in here that's missing. There's photos that should be in these aerial survey archives, but they're not here. And so I kind of quickly realized that the reason they weren't in those archives is that because they would have shown these, you know, kind of sensitive or these black military sites. And so, of course, at that point, then I got real interested in them precisely because you couldn't see them in these archives. And so I started working on it kind of as a hobby. And then at some point, I really started taking it seriously. And it developed into several books, actually.
Yes, it has. We're talking to Trevor Paglen, everybody, author of Blank Spots on the Map. He's a trained geographer by trade, but he's talking about how he discovered some of our most secret black operations bases in the United States and, in fact, around the world. So tell us a little bit more about your methodology, Trevor, because that's what's so fascinating to me. You actually had to become sort of the Columbo of black ops in order to find the secrets to this, didn't you?
Well, but you're absolutely right. You have a problem right away, like I did. You get interested in secret places, right? And you want to write about them. You want to study them. Well, how the heck are you supposed to study something that the whole point of it is that you can't learn anything about it?
Mm-hmm.
So you got a little bit of a problem right there. And I guess the way that you do it, or the way that I began to learn how to do it, was to think about what are all the places where that secret world is going to intersect with the world that we can see, or is going to intersect with the public sphere or something like that. And so I mean that in very literal ways. For example, if you're looking at a satellite photo archive and there's photos that are missing, well, that tells you something right there. It gives you a negative outline of the secret thing, in the sense that in a way, it shines a spotlight on it. Says, hey, there's something secret here, and you know that there's something secret here because the photo's missing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an example of that. But there's lots of other examples like that as well. So, for example, one of the things I got really interested in was the kind of geography of CIA covert ops that was going on for quite a while, and wanted to know about where, you know, the CIA had a network of secret prisons around the world for a while, and I wanted to know where those prisons were. And it turned out that they were operating that program largely through a series of front companies. You know, CIA is kind of famous for making up fake companies and mm-hmm. doing their work through them. And it turned out, you know, if you can find out the companies that they're working through, you could actually learn quite a lot about what they were doing, because they're public companies, so they had to file a lot of the same paperwork that any other company would have to file. It was just tricky to find out what the fake ones were. And so me and my partner, a guy named A.C. Thompson, identified a number of aviation companies that they were using to fly people around and do logistics. And we were then able to track those airplanes, because they were just normal kind of civilian airplanes. And you could kind of get a glimpse into what they might be doing based on where they were going. And you could correlate that to stories that people would tell you, or you interview people that had been a part of that. So methodologically, it's a combination of, you know, real old-fashioned meat and potatoes reporting, you know, talking to people, pulling records and that sort of thing, as well as some things that are a little bit more creative in terms of trying to think about when something happens to the world, what are all the traces that it leaves? And trying to think through those questions on a case-by-case basis.
We're talking to Trevor Paglen, everybody, author of the book Blank Spots on the Map, The Dark Geography of the Pentagon's Secret World. And I find it interesting because you follow three very distinct paths, don't you, Trevor? You follow the money path, the people path, and the physical assets path. And those three things, when they intersect, give you a picture of something that isn't there. So we're all taxpayers listening to the sound of my voice, and I assume that you are too. How does these types of black ops, how do they get funded? Help us follow the money.
Yeah. Well, this is a real fun thing that you can do if you have a couple hours of time on your hands and you're a little bit obsessive-compulsive. What you can do is you can actually go to the Department of Defense website, and you can download a copy of the defense budget. And one of the ironic things, or not ironic, but kind of interesting things about the United States is that, on one hand, there is this vast secret part of the government But at the same time, the United States government is really one of the most open in the world. And so there's this kind of contradiction right at the beginning of it. And part of that is that you can, as a taxpayer, you can go and download the defense budget. And you can't download the defense budget for most countries. So, but you as a taxpayer have the right to see that. So you can download that, and you go through it, and most of it's pretty standard stuff. You know, you can see how much money the Army is spending on toilets in Iraq this year. You can see how much revenue that Vandenberg Air Force Base is getting from having an AT&T cell phone tower on their property. All kinds of stuff, whatever you want. You get into a section of that budget, however, called the RDT&E, which stands for Research, Development, Test, and Evaluation. You start going through that thing, and it starts to look really weird really quickly. You'll start to see things like, you'll see code names like Pilot Fish and Retract Maple and Link Evergreen. And you'll see millions and millions of dollars allocated to these projects that just have code names. And if you look up in the justification document, which is another part of the budget document, there will be no justification for them. They won't say anything about it.
Okay.
And then in other parts of the budget, it'll just say something like classified program or special program, and there will be no line item at all. It'll just be blank. And so what you can do, you know, again, you have to be a little bit obsessive compulsive to do this, but you can go ahead and add up every single line item that's published in that budget, and you compare it to the total, and you're going to find a discrepancy of between $30 and $50 billion, depending on what year it is. And what you've done basically just there is a back of the envelope calculation of what people call the black budget. And this is the part of the defense budget which is not made public, and in fact is not even made available to the vast majority of members of Congress. There's only a group of about 8 people in Congress who are allowed to see this thing.
Wow. Trevor, now that brings up an interesting point. $30 to $50 billion is in the black ops budget. How does that compare to the overall defense budget?
Yeah, well, the United States has by far the largest defense budget in the world. The United States defense budget is about, you know, around $600-800 billion, depending on how you calculate it. And the variables are there, whether you include wars in it and so forth. But yeah, that's just astounding. By comparison, the budget for the Chinese military is about $60 billion a year. So our budget is quite a lot larger than than that of the second largest military in the world.
So what you're saying is our black ops budget is equal to or nearly equal to the entire military budget of China.
That's right. That is a kind of astounding fact when you look at it.
And, yeah, absolutely.
Right, and right now, us sitting here today, this black budget is larger than it has ever been in the past. You know, when we think about, you know, the big eras of defense spending, we think about the Reagan administration, or we think about the Bush administration, the kind of buildup of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Right now, that black ops budget is larger than it's ever been.
We're talking to Trevor Paglen, everybody, author of the book Blank Spots on the Map. And Trevor, you said that the United States is both at the same time the most open and yet fairly secretive about these black ops things as well. So I wanted to ask you, because that's a delicate balancing act that the government is doing. It's also a delicate balancing act of what you're doing as well. How do you balance the need to share the information with the interests of national security? I mean, you don't want your works to become like a WikiLeaks, which has been in the news recently.
Yeah, well, I mean, anybody who studies this stuff, and in fact, pretty much everybody who works in this part of the secret world, will tell you that the vast majority of things that are classified do not need to be classified at all. There is a huge amount of bureaucratic butt covering that goes on, people covering up waste and things. You know, really, a lot of it doesn't need to be secret. There are not a whole lot of things actually out there that when you look at them that really look like they would damage national security, for example. And a lot of this stuff, when it's secret, but if you put two and two together, anybody can kind of figure it out. For example, this rocket that went up yesterday, mm-hmm. Vandenberg.
Right.
You know, pretty much anyone with a telescope could watch that thing and figure out what kind of orbit that it's going to go into. It's going to go into a low sun synchronous orbit. And that's going to tell you right there the kind of orbit that it's going to go into tells you that it is a reconnaissance satellite. It's taking pictures. It's probably something called a synthetic aperture radar satellite. It's probably something that takes pictures using radar so it can see through clouds and see at night. And, you know, if you're let's say you're India or you're doing some nuclear testing or something like that, and they've done this actually in the past, you would time your nuclear test in such a way where no American reconnaissance satellites are going to be overhead.
Mm-hmm.
You can't see what you're doing. Now, all of that stuff that I told you right now, which I think is all true, is very, very secret stuff. But it's also stuff that, you know, anybody who did a little bit of work could figure out just on their own without looking at a single classified document or interviewing anybody. And a lot of this material is like that.
So you don't have to be a rocket scientist to understand about the rockets that we're launching into space for satellites. We're talking to Trevor Paglen, everybody. Trevor, we're going to have to break for some commercials here. But when we come back, I want you to think about this. Is there any particular reason why a lot of these black ops bases exist here in the Southwest? And how did the Southwest get the nickname the Gun Belt? Don't answer that now. Answer it when we come back after this short break.
And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
It turns the brains into guacamole.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bill Frank. You are listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, AM 1400. That's Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is high visibility, low visibility. In our first half hour, we had on Shirley Jones, one of the most highly visible actresses of the 1970s. In this half hour, we're talking to Trevor Paglen, who wrote the book Blank Spots on the Maps, where he's discovered some of the most secretive bases that the United States has, both in the United States and abroad. And before we went away to commercial, Trevor, I asked you the question, why do so many of these black ops bases exist here in the Southwest, and how did the Southwest get the nickname the Gun Belt?
Yeah, super. So I think when you look at what we might call the geography of secrecy, in other words, where are these bases, where does the money go, and that sort of thing, you find them clustered around two areas. One is around Washington, D.C., for obvious reasons, right? And it's the seat of the government,
sure.
Heads of the CIA, NSA, that's all there. And you're absolutely right. You find a lot of it in the Southwest. And, in fact, economic geographers sometimes talk about the Southwest in terms of the Gun Belt. That's absolutely right. Now, why is that? Well, it turns out that since about the Second World War, a huge amount of defense spending has gone into the Southwest, Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, California, basically forming an arc through California, through Southern California, up through the Bay Area, up to about Seattle, which is where Boeing was until recently, and still has a lot of stuff there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that has to do primarily with, in a lot of the Second World War, it was civilian industries that were converted to wartime production. So, for example, you had auto factories in Detroit that were converted to make tanks
and
so on and so
mm-hmm.
forth.
Sure.
And after the Second World War, we do have a big defense buildup. You know, this is what Eisenhower famously called the military-industrial complex. But in the meantime, a lot of the industries that had been converted to wartime use in the Midwest went back to making cars or what have you. And so that money was going to go to somewhere else, and there was defense companies that sprung up primarily in the Southwest that were doing this, aviation companies and so on and so forth. That's one reason. Another reason is that there's just a lot of space in the Southwest. You could go to a place like New Mexico or Nevada or Arizona, and you could get huge, huge tracts of land that were the size of small countries. And it was pretty, you know, politically pretty easy to do. And so during the Second World War, you have a huge amount of land that were appropriated for a bombing and gunnery practice, places like the Nellis Range in Nevada, for example. So the military had a whole bunch of land there, and you could use that to do test airplanes and do aviation stuff. That's the second reason. I think the third reason finally has to do with the technology industries, right? Which for example, during the Second World War, you have technologies like radar and electronic warfare being developed at places like Silicon Valley and Los Angeles, coming out of the research universities there. And so those industries, you know, come out of the universities and industries get formed around them. So now, for example, you have Lockheed Space Systems is based in Silicon Valley, and there's always been a pretty intimate relationship between high technology and military stuff as well.
I hadn't thought about the technology connection, but that is a good point that you make there, Trevor Paglen. We're talking to Trevor Paglen, author of the book Blank Spots on the Map, The Dark Geography of the Pentagon's Secret World. Trevor, you describe these black ops bases all over, and how is it with all of these bases, they employ both civilian and military personnel, yet how do they remain invisible? I mean, you'd think that somebody working on the base would go to a bar one night, get drunk, and start shooting off his mouth. How do you, with that many people involved, how do you keep something like this a secret?
This is something that's always been amazing to me, is that, you know, in the United States, you have about 3 to 4 million people who have security clearances, and you have almost a million people who have top secret military clearances. And yet, a lot of this stuff really does remain secret. And so that represents just a huge feat of social engineering or cultural engineering in a way. How do you do that? And I think there's a couple of reasons why that works. First of all, if you talk about this stuff, if you're working on a top secret project and you get drunk at the local bar and start blabbing about it and it comes out, you're going to be in a whole lot of trouble. You can go to prison. You definitely can lose your pension, you'd really be out on the street. And so there's very severe consequences for talking about this stuff. The second has to do with the way that information is compartmentalized. So, for example, if you're working on, let's use last night's example, you're working on a synthetic aperture radar reconnaissance secret satellite that's going to go up into orbit. And let's say you're working on the propulsion system. So you're trying to work on the jets that are going to, or the little rocket boosters that are going to keep it in the right orbit. You know, if you're working on that, you don't get to know anything about what the imaging system does. You don't get to know anything about any kinds of signals intelligence payload that might be on that platform. So the information is very compartmented, and you're only allowed to know the details of what you need to know to do your job. I talked to a guy once who was a mechanic, and he had worked on the old SR-71, that big
Blackbird
spy plane. Mm. And he told me when he was working on it for a while, and he thought forever that it was a speedboat.
Really?
He didn't even know it was an airplane when he was working on it at first. You know, and that's kind of fun. So I think between those two things, a lot of things do remain secret. And beyond that, you know, what a lot of the secret things are, you know, are very technical, to be honest with you. If you talk to I talked to a pilot once who'd flown a secret airplane called Tacit Blue, and the airplane was declassified, and he could talk about it. And he said, "Oh, I'm so happy I'm able to talk about this airplane and this and that." And you ask him about him, and he would just tell you, go on and on about, oh, you know, the turn radius is this, and this is the way it does, like, vector, you know, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. You don't even understand what the heck this stuff is. You know, and this is, so I think a lot of the secrets, secrecy things are like that as well. Very, very technical, very difficult to understand unless you're an insider.
Gotcha. We're talking to Trevor Paglen. Trevor, let's talk about Tacit Blue for a minute. What airplane did that eventually become now that it's been declassified? Has it become a production military fighter or bomber?
No, that was one of the, it was a stealth demonstrator. So in the late 1970s and in the 1980s, they were kind of inventing various approaches to what we now know as stealth technology. There was an airplane that was built in the late 1970s called HAV Blue, which demonstrated the faceted approach to stealth. In other words, it's the philosophy of stealth where you make an airplane out of a bunch of individual plates. And that philosophy became mature in the F-117 stealth fighter, right? And you look at the stealth fighter and it's basically made out of a bunch of plates.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Tacit Blue was demonstrating basically what were newer mathematical algorithms you could use to design stealth airplanes that allowed you to have curved surfaces. And it was an airplane that was built by Northrop, and it was a stealth plane, but it looked almost like an upside-down bathtub. It was curved and had little stubby wings, and it was supposed to show you that you could make an airplane with curved surfaces that could be stealthy.
I see.
It did not turn into any kind of operational platform.
Okay. We're talking to Trevor Paglen, everybody. Blank Spots on the Map is his book. Trevor, I'm always curious. I mean, you're writing a lot about a lot of secret stuff, a lot of stuff that's very sensitive, classified by the government. Were you ever endangered in any way or threatened in any way when you were writing this book?
Well, you know, when you're working with this stuff, obviously some people get angry with you, some people support you, and this is both within and outside the intelligence community or the defense industry or whatever it is that you might be writing about. So, I have, for example, as many fans in the CIA as I have people who are upset with me in the CIA, for example. You never are going to get a letter on a CIA letterhead telling you to stop doing something, unless you've worked for them. I mean, they have no jurisdiction. For example, when you look at the military or the intelligence, it's not really you're not under their jurisdiction as a civilian. And furthermore, we talked a little bit earlier about this kind of contradiction in the United States about it being very open at the same time it's very secretive. There's no statutory basis for secrecy in the United States. All of the kind of secrecy rules or laws or things that can get you in trouble are by executive order. So they really only apply to people who have signed security agreements and work in some capacity under the executive branch, whether that's the military or intelligence community or something like that. So if you're a journalist and you find out something secret, you can publish it, and there's no law that says that you can't do that. The exception to that is the Espionage Act of 1917, which is a little bit, is not invoked that often, and it's very difficult to use against someone like a journalist or something like that, because you have to show that the intent of the disclosure was to harm national security. And so it really does more narrowly apply to spies, really.
Well, that's got to be a relief to you, Trevor, that you're not going to have a knock on the door late in the night and be whisked away to one of these secret bases that you've discovered. So, Trevor, I have to ask you, what did you get out of writing this book, Dark Spots on the Map?
Yeah, well, I want to plug Blank Spots on the Map, and I also want to plug my brand new book, which just came out, which is called Invisible, and it's Covert Actions in Classified Landscapes, and it's actually a photography book of all black sites. It's all photos of secret satellites and secret military bases.
You're way ahead of me, Trevor. I was going to talk about that. But go on. What did you get out of Invisible, and what did you get out of Dark Spots, Blank Spots?
Well, I guess what I got out of it was really, fun. I guess both of those books are me kind of trying to wrap my head around this secret world, and it's done at a pretty low level of resolution in the sense that I try to really give an overview of what are all the aspects of this secret part of the defense and the intelligence industries. You have, CIA covert operations here, and you have military aerospace projects over here and satellites over here, and it's really quite an overview of a lot of different kinds of activities which are united by the fact that they're black or they're like unacknowledged programs. And I guess for me that was really, really helpful in terms of trying to wrap my head around that. And then in a little bit of a more philosophical sense, I was trying to wrap my head around what does it mean to have in a democratic state, to have a huge part of the state which operates according to very, very different sets of rules. And I was trying to come to terms with all the kind of contradictions and paradoxes that itself creates.
Trevor Paglen, you're a great guest. It's a fascinating subject. He's got two books, Blank Spots on the Map and Invisible. Thank you so much for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you so much for having me. Take care now.